breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY and Billy Penn, this is your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. My name is Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
Liz, how are you enjoying yet another wet, misty Friday on which we will watch the Phillies play baseball? How are you enjoying the zigging and hysterical zagging of watching the Phillies at this point? They once again secured a victory last night, so feelings, you know, everybody woke up this morning, I think, feeling a lot better than they had, because now the Phillies have a winning record. You know, they're beating up on a team at the beginning of a homestand full of teams they should be beating up on. I mean, all hope was lost a couple days ago. Today feels like there's the sun's coming up again. Like, what's where are we at?
Welcome to baseball. Like, that's, we've talked about this before. We do a multi-weekly, you know, baseball podcast, and we're reacting to the moment, just like the fans are. So where are we today? We're up. Today we're up. I actually forgot. I had actually gone to bed remembering they won and woke up thinking they lost, didn't they? Anyway, that was terrible. And then I'm like, nope, that is not what happened. Alec Bohm was the hero.
So you're
Alec Bohm was the hero.
You're in postseason form at this point.
I'm just, here's the thing. I'm trying not to let the day-to-day bother me and just accept whatever it is. I'm trying not to be like, this is great. This is, I could say this is great, this is bad, but I need to not let it affect my actual mood towards the world in my job and life.
Well, as I said, the Phillies are about to embark on, or have embarked on, a 10-game homestand against the Pirates, Rockies, and White Sox. Elizabeth, there is absolutely no excuse not to win very close to all of these baseball
Almost
games.
Almost all, yeah.
This is definitely a boon for the Phillies and a chance to make up some ground people may feel that they have lost by stumbling out the gate early this season. But they certainly capitalized on that opportunity last night. Liz, I don't know, were you aware of the little narrative that developed, that began previous to the game yesterday, and then, like, the Phillies did what they did in the game when they won 5-1 over the Pirates? Like, are you aware of yesterday's little narrative?
I mean, I've been listening to the radio broadcast. Is this something that has been, if it's been on social media, then no. I have not been working the last couple of days, and my rule is, for the most part, unless I'm working or the Phillies game is ultra entertaining, I'm not going to be on social media.
Well, it comes down to everybody's favorite Phillies analyst, Howard Eskin. And I was reading Todd Zielecki's write-up for MLB.com about yesterday's game, which has a section that reads, "Hours before the game, a member of the media questioned Rob Thompson about the team's lack of power. What could he do to help the situation? Keep playing his players," Thompson said. "But would the Phillies ever hit for enough power this year?" Which strangely ignored the talent on the roster, their track records, and the fact the team had played only 12 games in a 162-game season and mostly in terrible weather. I had a hard time parsing out exactly what that last sentence meant until I realized, oh, this is still addressing whoever the asker of the question is. And, like, reading a Todd Zielecki write-up was just like, well, he seems, this is as close as he gets to going after somebody. Like, what is this? I was completely unaware of this. I had no idea. Apparently, Howard Eskin asked Rob Thompson before the game what he, the manager, could do to get his team to start slugging because, quote, 16 straight singles ain't going to get it done. It actually went up to 19 before the Phillies.
Ain't going to get want done. Like, theoretically, every game matters, but, like, the games at the beginning of the season matter just as much as the ones at the end. But the ones at the beginning of the season, you can't really look at them for any kind of definitive narrative or storyline unless they're winning all of them or losing all of them. Beyond that, it's just like, hey, they've been playing the length of two spring training weeks.
I mean, look, I'm with you in the field of rationality here, but I will also say that when you have a stat like the Phillies have singled 16 and then 19 times between extra base hits, that's something you're going to, like, that is a statistic you can form a question around. Like, that is interesting enough. And you're going to get asked about it. But Thompson's reply. No, go ahead.
But that or end any other question should not be asked by Howard Eskin. Where's the ice cream machine? How do I pay this parking ticket?
I do like the idea that Rob Thompson has a button he can push that says fix offense. And he's just like, not yet. Not pushing it yet. I think just a couple more bad games and we will we'll finally get ready to push the button. But his response was, if you don't think we're going to slug, then you haven't been watching the games. Then there was this like awkward exchange. Eskin kind of stumbled his way through a follow-up in which he said the Phillies were definitely going to make the playoffs, which felt like a total 180 from what he had been saying. And Thompson said, but you don't think we're going to slug? And then everyone laughed. Well, the Phillies certainly slugged in game one versus the Pirates. Sometimes timing just works out, like me saying Bryce Harper's going to hit 3 home runs in a game, and then he does it. Sometimes the Phillies get called out for not hitting for power too much, and then, hey, look, they came out and hit 3 home runs against the Pirates with Alec Bohm, Brandon Marsh, and Bryson Stott all hitting homers to secure a 5-1 victory. Even number 3 prospect Aiden Miller hit one for the Threshers last night. Liz, you're Rob Thompson. What do you claim you've done to fix the Phillies slugging after that game? Yeah, afterwards he was of course like, hey, where's Howard? Just to put a bow on that little story that started before the game. But what do you claim, if you want to claim that, oh yeah, there was something I could do and I did it. What are you claiming to have done to have fixed the Phillies offense now that they've hit 3 home runs?
If I'm Rob Thompson,
mm-hmm.
If I'm actually Rob Thompson, I claim to have done nothing but trust my players, because that's what he did.
I mean, I guess we all want to know what Rob Thompson could do to fix the offense because we would want him to do it. But this kind of just
he has
feeds,
no answer because there is not.
This feeds into the general argument right now. I mean, you see a lot of claims that Thompson or Kevin Long, quote unquote, need to go. I mean, I've seen people say Kyle Schwarber needs to go. Like, you know, no one's thinking where they're going to go. They're just mad at them and they want them to go away. They want them to be punished in some way for being frustrating. But when you start talking about Thompson and Long, it's because people are saying, well, the problem is widespread. So therefore, it's a cultural issue. Therefore, the people in leadership positions need to be the ones to go. But I think we all know now that firing a hitting coach is something you just do when you don't really have a good idea to fix something a lot of the time.
And again, where we are
in the season and what the Phillies situation is, obviously, it makes claims like that just laughable. I mean, Thompson's not only just saying, hey, the best way for us to start hitting is to keep going out there and keep hitting until we're hitting again. But that's also like that is his approach just players wise, but also literally the only thing that's going to fix the Phillies. I mean, there's not a rock to turn over here. Most of these guys, including Nick Castellanos, are proven major league hitters, and you know, they're only going to hit with more opportunities to hit. Like, that's the only way to start hitting, and that's all Rob Thompson has as an answer. That's all he's really given as answers in the past when this situation has arisen.
And that's all any manager gives as an answer, because it's the only thing. It's like, well, what are your players doing? Like, they're doing the work because they're major league players. They're being paid major league money. And if they're not being held, you know, if they're not doing the work, they're going to be held accountable by their clubs, unless their clubs are terrible at doing that, in which case it'll show on the outside. The Phillies are not that club. Their players do the work. We've seen it. They care deeply about performing, whether or not it's even if it's not consistently, they want to feel like they're contributing because they care about how the team is doing and how they're perceived. Like, comments like that make it seem like the players have no agency in this, or that they're stupid, or that they're incapable, and they're not. The Phillies have done everything they can with technology and coaching to assist the players to get better at hitting. And the reason why we're continuing to yell at players about hitting now in the 100 and whatever year of baseball existing is because hitting is hard. It's hard. Anytime someone yells at someone else about how do you not hit, I do it too. And then I yell at myself like, You cannot do this. They're a major league hitter, and it's hard to do. It's hard. Like, I'm so frustrated with this type of thing. Like, and we all get there when, you know, Castellanos is looking at his 588th called strike three of the season. But, sorry. I get so frustrated at journalists using that lazy, lazy storytelling, those lazy questions, and just leaning on that for their jobs when there's so much excellent writing and coverage being done right now on the Phillies and across baseball. Like, it's just, deeply frustrating.
Zalecki also noted the Phillies have played in mostly terrible weather since the beginning of the year. No team has played more games in the rain. Only four teams have played in more games below 50 degrees at first pitch. So the other day when I was like, I don't think they've played a game in decent weather since the beginning of the season, I was kind of not way off on that. That is not just my imagination. That is something definitely has been perceived by us watching and the Phillies. So, yes. You know, again, this isn't meant to be, whatever, you should be enjoying every single second of Phillies baseball. That will never happen. But it's really more just echoing Rob Thompson's approach here, is that at the moment, all you can keep doing is continue to play and keep putting these guys out there. So with the, on that note, we did see some success last night with the home run. You know, yeah, you don't want to think the Phillies' whole offense hinges on whether or not they can hit home runs, because sometimes they're just not going to be able to hit home runs. But it doesn't seem like we've developed that into that form yet. So if this is still a home run reliant offense, or one that would just benefit from extra base hits before, 19 singles have gone by between Alec Boehm extra base hits, because he bookended both ends of that streak. Which of those three home runs last night from notably the younger contingent of the Phillies starters did you like the most? You had Alec Boehm's solo shot to give the Phillies a 1-0 lead. You had Brandon Marsh, who hit what appeared to be a double, but then the umpires overturned the call to make it a home run. And that added two runs for the Phillies. And then Bryson Stott, he went down on one knee to get one low and inside. And probably the Boehm's went into the bullpen, but Stott, I think off the bat, had the most clear home run of the three of them. So of the three, who were you most excited to see homer? Which home run did you feel like was the coolest just in general? Where are you at?
All right. I'm really torn between Marsh and Stott, because Marsh, for me, anytime he does something good, it's just more evidence stacking up of why he should be in the lineup every day. Regardless of what type of handed pitcher is, on the mound, he should be on the mound. He should be hitting all the time. He should be hitting as much as possible, because he clearly gets more out of it. But also, it was Bryson Stott's first home run. He's been in an awful slump. Really, one of the first of his career. Because I looked at his game logs last year, and he did pretty well throughout the entire season. And so this is like a not a new experience, but I think one that's extended is a little unfamiliar for him. So I would like. I'm happy that he got that home run, because it put the Phillies, even further away from the Pirates, and he clearly needed it. He needed it personally.
Yeah, he got off to a pretty cold start in 2022. He had four hits.
Oh, yeah, 22.
Five hits in the Phillies' first 10 games. And he kind of talked about that the other day. I believe it was in The Athletic. He was talking about just getting off to that colder start. Like, some years he says, I've got off to colder starts, I've got off to really hot starts, it's just kind of about getting back into that mindset and everything. And this year it's just taken a little more, and you started to see some visible frustration from him after his at bats. So I think with a couple of these guys, even Boehm, who hasn't really been the worst struggler in the Phillies offense, you're seeing it kind of, starting to maybe get to them a little bit, just seeing examples of them also being displeased. And that's when you get into the danger zone of guys starting to push and stuff. So Stott's home run was, I think, really important just for him, just to be able to break through, because of those three guys, he's certainly the one that's been struggling the most. But again, Alec Boehm has just been one of the most steady presences on this roster this year. He really has, and he probably won't get a lot of credit for that. But as far as like the offense goes, he's been one of the few guys who has been hitting since opening day and who, yeah, has made a few mistakes that have cost the Phillies at third base. But honestly, I think he's made more great plays out there than errors so far this year. We just passed the anniversary of the I Hate This Effing Place game, and the Phillies acknowledge it. It's like a holiday in the Phillies organization now, which is interesting. But he, including the play to end last night's game where he made a sliding catch in foul territory for the third out to seal the win. I mean, I feel like we've just been watching this guy make incredible plays at third all season long. He had that error to start game two that, you know, let the Braves in pretty much immediately, and the game didn't really go too well from there on out. But other than that, I feel like you already have a pretty significant slideshow of great Alec Bohm plays at third. And then you throw in the fact that he's able to contribute on offense like this last night in a even more powerful way, as he was able to barrel up on a pitch and muscle it into the bullpen. That's I think this is a successful start to the season for Alec Bohm, would you say?
Completely. I mean, this is a critical year for Bohm. He had I'm trying to remember. He had a great year last year, and I'm trying to remember how his 22 went off the top of my head. But I remember before the season thinking this is a critical year for Alec Bohm. Yes, so he was good last year. He was good in 22. It was 21. He had not a great year. But if he can continue to do well this year and solidify himself as like a solid like 270, 280 hitter somewhere in there, who provides good defense at third base, it's not always going to be pretty. It's not always going to be right. But more often than not, he will get the job done, and he'll make plays that not everyone can make. He's continuing to improve. I just don't think he gets a lot of credit overall. I completely forgot. He finished second in Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
In 2020. Like, that's...
What a year to debut. He's a 2020 child. And the fact that he's able to, like, walk around in broad daylight is probably a miracle.
I know. Like, God bless everybody who just had to do something major and significant in that weird, weird year.
I'm from the class of 2020, and we're lucky you just get hit with like a flashlight beam and hiss and run into the trash cans.
You poor children, we understand.
He's definitely been a consistent presence in this offense. You know, not a dominating force. No one's really been like ripping the ball into the stands except for Bryce Harper for exactly one baseball game, but Bohm has been doing what he always does. You know, that's why he bats where he bats. Thompson was saying earlier, he wants people to be on base when Alec Bohm comes to bat, because he's kind of like an engine for this offense. He's not always the biggest one, but he's typically driving in the runs by hitting a lot of line drives. So good start for him. I already mentioned Stott's home run just being kind of important for him, because he's been, even his hard hit balls have turned into outs so far this season. So for him to be able to get into one, I think, was also important. And it wasn't like any of those runs were coming in garbage time. And then, of course, you have Marsh's, which, of course, has some weird goofiness to it, where he's got to stand on second base while they review it and figure out if it's a home run. And then he gets to come home. But I think he brings a looseness to this offense that they don't always have. I think some of these guys really get in their own heads when they're struggling, get kind of like pouty and withdrawn. But, you know, that's never the case with Marsh, you'll notice. He's never really seems to be that upset about anything that's going on. So those are...
Championship teams are built on guys like Bohm and Marsh. Like, those are the guys that you find on every team. A guy that is not flashy but makes things go, and a guy who is just weird.
Does it
just the weird guy?
Did it strike you last night that, you know, in this one game sample size of the Phillies kind of finding their power stroke, that the guys hitting home runs we're talking about all come from what used to be called and is still occasionally called daycare, just like the younger group of guys, but not like the huge power-hitting monsters that are Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, JT Realmuto, these guys who are supposed to be like hitting the crap out of the ball. But when we're talking about the Phillies' offensive explosion, we're talking about guys like Marsh, Stott, and Bohm. Does that strike you as particularly interesting or concerning?
Well, it's what happen. It's what needs to happen on a good team.
Yeah.
When the big guys aren't hitting, when there's a power outage somewhere in the lineup, someone else has to produce. It, like, Bohm has sort of, like, every game this, a lot of the Phillies' wins this season have required a hero. There hasn't been a ton of, like, group efforts. There's usually been one guy who's hit the big home run that put them on top, that made the big play to stop it. And that, you know, for now, that's fine, but there needs to be more contribution overall. And this was a little bit of that. This was more guys contributing and sort of filling the hole where the big hitters just cannot, they just can't get a hold of one right now.
Do you think this weekend we will see our first bit of Kyle Schwarber is singling too much commentary? I'm kind of waiting for it because he has two home runs on the year, and obviously we all know he has been hitting a lot more singles than he typically does. He only has 6 walks in 52 at-bats so far this season, which is unquestionably scary for Kyle Schwarber. He does have his 11 hits, 9 are singles, 2 are home runs.
Interesting.
No other.
I mean, we can already see, think fascinating. Fascinating. I'm going to be curious to see where he goes, because I think we should all be pleased in general that he is getting on base. Yes.
Well, he was getting on. The problem wasn't getting on base before. He was either homering or working a walk, like an absurd amount of walks. So he was getting on base before. This is a different kind of dimension we have not seen before, where he is, you know, obviously hitting hard line drives, but not hitting them out of the stadium as nearly as often. It's just kind of a new thing, because usually he's just struggling. And I wouldn't say hitting 212 with a 620 OPS through the first 13 games isn't, you know, is good, or is signs of not struggling, or is even too far off the mark for Kyle Schwarber. It's more just like how he's getting to that point is different this year, noticeably so. It's just not, I think, a huge concern yet for anybody. So it's not really being talked about. But how he's getting on base is different. It's just, you know, it's on base percentage is .293. So it's not even like he's blowing that out of the water there. He's just singling a lot. He's hitting a lot of hard line drives. And you're like, huh, I wonder if this is something they talk to him about. And if it is, why?
I mean, it's a good question. Let's see what happens. Kyle Schwarber is not the type of hitter to let anyone dictate to him. I don't think that what he's doing in his form. And so if something's not working for him, I have confidence that he's going to be like, nope, I'm not doing this. This is uncomfortable.
He falls into that class with Trey Turner so far this year, where you can find a lot of spray charts or a lot of pitch tracks where he's leaving some meatballs on his plate. And some pitches are coming right down the pike at like 90, 91 mile an hour, and they're not getting crushed out of the stadium. And you have to wonder why. And I want to get into that. I want to talk a little bit about the Phillies hitting approach, kind of centered around the guys who've been struggling the most, like Nick Castellanos. But before we get any further along, I do want to just throw some words at the pitching, which, again, was incredible last night. You got an impeccable performance in Game 1 against the Pirates from Ranger Suarez, who you should really be expecting this kind of performance from. 6 innings, 2 hits, 0 runs, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts on 97 pitches, 62 for strikes. I can't think the Phillies want a whole lot more than that. And we're sitting here talking about individual players and parts of the team and all of these guys, you know, as much or as little commentary as there is out there, there's typically some kind of commentary on all of these topics and all of these guys. Ranger Suarez has really cut down on his walks from last year. He is attacking the strike zone. And frankly, the only Ranger Suarez analysis out there is he's good. He's really good. He looks really good. That's everyone's just like, yeah, moving on. Like, Ranger Suarez looks great. Matt Gelb noted that the Phillies starting rotation. What do you think the Phillies starting rotation's ERA through 13 games is?
I'm going to say it's definitely under 3. Let's say it's under 3.
Okay, but between
two and three.
You give me a number. You don't just get to give me an entire points worth of, oh, well, it's in there somewhere. No, you give me a number.
No, but that is what I did.
You give me a number to the 100th decimal point, or we are not moving on.
Let's say 2.34.
Mm, an optimist. I like it. You're only off
I'm
by one
numeral. I'm looking at Ranger Suarez's ERA right now. We just finished talking about him. What do you want?
I want a guess at their ERA, and you gave that
and
to me.
And then I did it.
You're off by one numeral. It's 274 through 13 games, which is still staggeringly
really
good. This team really needs to lean on its pitching, and you know
they
just got their heads over 500 in doing that. So hopefully, you know, as we keep saying, the players keep playing and the hitters remember how to hit. They like pick up a bat and look at it and go, "I remember you," and get into the batter's box, and suddenly it all comes back to them. But while they're figuring it out and while their heads are getting on straight at the plate, the pitching has been doing its job, and I couldn't not talk about Ranger Suarez last night, even though there's so little to talk about. Well, you're just like, yeah, he just kind of took care of business, didn't let the Pirates get a rally going, didn't let them cross the plate, didn't really allow more than four base runners like in six innings. It's exactly the kind of dominant, unexciting pitching that the Phillies need to be able to lean on when their offense isn't going like that. And speaking of pitching, word is we could get Orion Kerkering back this weekend as well. Neither Spencer Turnbull nor Taijuan Walker, Liz, have allowed a run in the big leagues this season in a combined two starts. Unfortunately, both starts are Spencer Turnbull's.
I was going to say, I don't think one of them has made a start. And I mean, if the Phillies forget about Taijuan Walker at this point, I wouldn't blame them. Spencer Turnbull has been spectacular.
I think at the moment they're just taking their time and having Walker take his time. It's not that Walker is like a guaranteed liability or anything, but I think based on what we've seen and the struggles he's had so far this year, since the preseason, the struggles he's had kind of ramping his velocity up, I think it's almost just like, I wish we could just not have to deal with this, especially with things working out so well with Spencer Turnbull, who you can't talk about the success of the pitching staff without bringing up Spencer Turnbull as well, who has now made two starts for the Phillies and not allowed a run, and is the only other, well, I guess until he made his third start, but like he was up there with Zach Wheeler statistically, like with the Phillies starting pitching. So that's a huge boon and a testament to Dombrowski's ability to pick up somebody the Phillies really were going to need. I don't know if they planned on having Turnbull making starts this early in the season. I think some people predicted it might be the case because you can't always trust Taijuan Walker's arm coming out of the spring, but here we are. And I'm sure the Phillies kind of just would love to put Walker in a drawer and just not deal with that situation at the moment. And I think they have a couple weeks before they really have to, but he had a rehab assignment on Thursday as they ease him back into full strength by early May. And so that situation is ongoing. But the truly exciting return is, like I said, that of Orion Kerkering, who Todd Zielecki says could join the Phillies as early as this weekend. Liz, based on what we've seen from the Phillies bullpen thus far, you know, I think you've seen a lot of clutch moments and a lot of clutch pitching. You've also seen some holes spring in a couple of spots. The Phillies bullpen has faltered. Some guys have just been hammered. But I feel like every time they have, they've come out the next night and not allowed the failure to spiral. Like they haven't come out looking like they still were thinking about yesterday. They were able to let it go and they come out and they, you know, they throw a 1-2-3 shutdown inning and move on with their lives, which is probably the healthiest place to have your bullpen. Is bringing Orion Kerkering in, a kid who's never, by the way, pitched in the regular season of Major League, or this early in the regular season anyway. He made like a couple of appearances last year, and then it was straight to the postseason. He made quite an impression on everyone. He's got an incredible arsenal of pitches. He is a very exciting young talent. Liz, how much pressure are we putting on Orion Kerkering when he comes back into the Phillies bullpen that has struggled at times this season?
I don't think there's going to be too much pressure. I mean, he might feel some. It's the first time he's pitched, as you said, this early in the major league season. But there's going to be significantly less pressure on him than there was when he made his like third or fourth major league appearance in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I think anything that's not in the playoffs is a good start for Mr. Orion Kerkering.
He debuted on September 24th last year, appeared in three regular season games before the playoffs. I think we all know. He looked very good in the small sample size we had, and he had a bit of his development delayed, I think, coming into this year. So he has been on the shelf for the last couple weeks as the Phillies kind of ramp him back up as well. 23 years old. I mean, I think he will be a boost to this bullpen, at least just as a fresh arm, as another arm. You know, you can totally see a situation where he comes out and, you know, maybe gets into some trouble, you know, as he eases back into this high leverage situations the Phillies were unafraid to put him in last year. You know, I think you could see that. I think you could see some nerves. You know, I think he's had some time to like realize, oh, wow, like it's not like I'm, everything's a blur and I'm numb to the situation. I just got dropped in here. No, this year it's like kind of a slower, more regular approach. And it's like, I'm not dropping in the middle of a playoff race. I'm a guy who's being expected to perform as part of a much longer season. So I think you're right that the intensity is ratcheted down, but the spiders running around in his head may be a factor still, because, you know, he's a 23-year-old, but he's thrown on the major league level what they've identified as a sweeper most of the time, and he works a four-seamer in on occasion as well. But this is a kid who, yeah, we saw him last year. He's an exciting young arm, and I think it could really help because the Phillies' pitching depth will be in question, I think, all season long. I think they will be one guy away from not having as great a depth. And I think when you have guys like Alvarado who can get into trouble when they're not hitting the strike zone, guys like Strom who bring that intensity, but again, will allow some base runners and might get into some trouble. Guys like Soto, who have made us nervous in the past, but Jeff Hoffman, who I mentioned, oh, throwing scoreless innings all season long, this is great. And then the next time out, yeah, he got blown up by the Cardinals.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I saw that happen. I'm like, oh, I remember exactly what Justin said. Whoops.
Yeah, but we're also seeing a revelation in Junior Marte as well, as he's really come through for the Phillies out of the pen this year as well. So being able to get more from different guys, I think, tells you that, you know, if you want to make the pitching and or if you want to make the hitting into a cultural issue and say things like, oh, well, the coach, the manager, they've got to be accountable because this is widespread. You got to look at the Phillies pitching staff and kind of deliver credit the same way, that the fact that not only are some of these individual guys able to come through or able to shake off a bad inning and come back the next day, but since the success of this pitching staff is widespread as well, you got to be encouraged by the fact that culturally the Phillies pitching is in a really good spot right now and able to carry them through these games that the offense hasn't really shown up for. Hopefully this 10-game homestead is exactly what they need to get back on track. Offensively, they're playing some really beatable teams. And so for our last topic here, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the hitting, talk about Nick Castellanos. Matt Gelb had a piece on him in The Athletic. Robert Orr had a piece on him in Baseball Prospectus. Everybody's kind of zeroing in on Castellanos because while there are other struggling members of the Phillies offense, you've at least seen moments like Bryson Stott hitting a home run last night, Trey Turner having like 39 straight steals without getting caught going back to last year. Like there's some success. There's some silver linings. I mean, Turner's the team's hit leader, which I didn't realize until we were talking about it the other night. Like there are some silver linings to some of these guys who you would say are struggling, but Castellanos and like to a lesser extent, Johan Rojas, but the context of his situation is obviously different. But Castellanos is kind of getting zeroed in on here because he looks lost. He looks totally lost. He really shouldn't be. And people, you know, knowing his deal and his contract and the role he's supposed to have, people want answers. So just before we dive in here, Liz, has there been are you worried about anybody the way you might be worried about Castellanos? Is he the biggest trouble spot in this offense for you?
He's the one I'm worried about the most now. Like, for sure. I mean, Rojas, for sure. But, I mean, I'm of the, you know, let's maybe launch him into the sun category at the moment. Or, you know,
him into the sun. Or maybe just the bus to Lehigh Valley.
I was just going to say maybe down back to Lehigh Valley. Because one of those might be too extreme. But when he's, you know, when he's hitting into a double play yet again, I think sun. But, like, that's it. Castellanos it worries me because I think he's shown over the course of his time here that he is affected quite a bit by his attitude and his confidence level. And if that's not high, which it wouldn't be at this point if he's not hitting, I get worried for him because it feels like he might get a little too far out there with his feelings and his thoughts. And I want people to pull him back in and be like, no, you are a Major League Baseball player. You just have to keep hitting and get through it.
What do you think the inside of his head looks like?
I know some people, I've read interviews with Castellanos. He sounds like people I know. And if I mash those people together, it's quite an interesting place, I would say.
There's a lot going on, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
I hear, like, there's carnival music in one corner, and there's, like, horror movie over in another, and, like, there's a carousel downstairs, and I feel like there's, like, 8 different parties, and they're all super different, and no one is going to the same party at all. Except for Castellanos, which is the problem.
Yeah. Castellanos has notably had a slow start to the season. This is a guy we have seen start slowly before. Certainly 2022, we can recall, was not his best showing as a major league player for most of the season. Last year, he came back in a big way, was a team leader in the absence of Rhys Hoskins, hit a lot in the first half of the season, fell off a couple of times in the second half, and ultimately disappeared in the playoffs. He does not have an extra base hit this season in 46 at-bats through 13 games. On Baseball Prospectus, Robert Orr wrote about how Castellanos, quote, the dilemma he's facing is that in an effort to exhibit a better eye, he's also no longer swinging as much in areas where he's historically been at his best. There's a book on Castellanos now. I mean, we all watch him and Turner to an extent swing at those low and outside sliders, and we call him out about it, but there's a little more trickery to it right now. When I say there's a book on Castellanos, it's that pitchers know how to pitch from him last year, like the past few years. They know he's going to chase that pitch, so they not only throw it hoping he'll chase it. Orr writes about how they're stealing strikes from him because even when he doesn't swing at that junk out of the zone, they're able to nibble on the corner with off-speed and breaking stuff to make it a strike, even if he doesn't take a hack at it. So he's losing both ways there. And I feel like we have had a, you know, I don't have any numbers on this, but I feel like we've had enough examples of umpires calling pitches inches off the plate, typically low this year. Yeah. There's definitely been several key at-bats, whether the Phillies were taking them or the Phillies were, you know, pitching to them, where they did not benefit from umpires messing with those low and outside corners. And Castellanos is the guy who's going to benefit the least from that. He told Matt Gelb of The Athletic that he felt in showing restraint to not swing at bad pitches, he's now also missing some good ones, or he's letting good ones go by. And that's what he's trying to get back. Like, his approach right now, as he has acknowledged, I am struggling, it's bad. He's talking about his approach and he's saying, this is what I'm trying to do. He is trying to address the thing that we call him out for the most. And in doing so, there may be an overcorrection happening here, because the pitches he's occasionally not swinging at are pitches that he used to crush. So go ahead.
I think it's not like the Phillies did this to him on purpose. You know, it's not like this happened because they wanted it to. It just shows how complicated hitting is. You know, like they're trying to get him to stop doing something and not realizing that it's going to mess with what makes him a good baseball player.
It does show that, and it also kind of feeds into the idea that this team is at its worst when it's
thinking
too hard.
it cannot be said enough. There's already so much going on in his head. The more you put in, the less you're going to get out. That's really what it is. The more you put into him, it doesn't get absorbed. I don't know what happens to it. It just gets compacted somehow. And like, it doesn't get absorbed. Just nothing comes from it. He's not a baseball player, I think, that benefits from this type of, like, calling it micromanaged makes it seem bad. And that's not what I mean. This kind of, it's a micromanaged approach. It's like they're taking parts of his swing and picking out parts they like. And it doesn't seem to be the right way to deal with Castellanos. And the only way that this is a bad thing is if they make him continue, is if they don't correct now. because it seems to be clear to everyone what the problem is.
Well,
hopefully the Phillies understand that there's a bit of an overcorrection. And the only way that this will be a problem from now on is if the Phillies don't address this new problem.
Well, I think part of the issue is we think of these things as, okay, there's been a diagnosis, so we can fix it. And that's not even really how a diagnosis works in general. Like, that, just because you even are aware of what an issue is, you maybe haven't zeroed in on exactly the core of it. This is a tough spot for Castellanos. Don't get me wrong. I get it just as frustrated as anybody watching his at-bats. And, you know, you find yourself repeating the same thing because he's doing the same thing. And it gets really frustrating. It's like, you know, you're not succeeding on that. So why are you doing that? And obviously, this is what we're saying. It's a lot more layered than that. And this year, he seems to be in a more particular situation. It's not just that pitchers know he'll chase that stuff. It's that they know how to get strikes on him even when he's not chasing. And now pitches that he used to hit, they've now pulled away from his ability to succeed by taking pitches he was able to hit off the plate. So now he's not even hitting when he was hitting before. And this is just like guys learning how to pitch to him better. And now he's got to up his game as well. And that's, in some cases, that's going to take time. You know, and you can say, oh, well, this is a team that starts slow typically. Sure. But Castellanos, you know, it might take some more weeks. And that's not what the Phillies want. And it's not what the fans want. But he's got to find a way to adjust to the adjustments of him. And then guess what? They're going to adjust to him again. That's just how it is when you're a good hitter. So that he can't get comfortable is a problem, but I think he's got the right support staff around him. Matt Gelb even writes, quote, "The team reconfigured the hitting support staff around Kevin Long, the veteran hitting coach, and emphasized different drills in the spring to help hitters avoid chasing bad pitches. One assistant hitting coach provides more detailed feedback during and after games about a hitter's swing decisions." So he goes out there and he goes 0-for-4 with two strikeouts or whatever and grounds into a double play or just drives the ball straight into the ground. And he comes off the field and there's a coach there with a tablet who's just like, here's what happened. Here's what you did. And the trick is always going to be finding balance in that. When you have such huge assets and you can zero down on such a detailed level, sometimes when you're a team that maybe doesn't always need that level of detail, that might be skewing focus or it might just be like getting in your head. Now, for the people that are calling for Rob Thompson or Kevin Long to be fired after 13 games, I have some bad news. The Phillies aren't as immediately vindictive as you. Long isn't going anywhere, nor is he responsible for the Phillies' slow offensive tempo. He's involved in it. But the conclusion that because the lack of slugging is widespread, firing him will get them out of their funk, it's just faulty. You know, you pull Long out of there, and I think a lot of the efforts the Phillies have in place to combat their natural issues fall apart. And players like Stott have mentioned how integral Long is in helping them when guys like he and Castellanos are struggling like they are. The results are never going to be immediate. It's hitting. But as Matt Gelb writes, but the Phillies in general are what they are. They like to swing. After reading like all of this and reading all the details about Castellanos, his approach, how he's trying to fix it, that's really what it comes down for me, is that this is a free swinging team. Mm-hmm. That doesn't always look good. You know, we talk about that with general aggressiveness when they're trying to steal more bases and get more aggressive on the base paths. Well, when you're not like totally zoned in, where you're not totally in a groove, that's going to look silly because you're going to get picked off. You're going to get caught in rundowns. You're going to get caught stealing. And the Phillies have been doing plenty of that. But that's what aggressiveness looks like when it's not working. So they kind of have to like sharpen up a bit. But that is their style. That's how they play. They try to attack first. And now hitting, it's kind of the same deal. This is a free swinging team. They like to hit. They like to swing. When they're struggling, it looks like they're just windmilling at pitches and they're just not hitting them. But it sounds like their efforts this spring were like to combat this natural state of free swinging that they always have. And while that could be a good thing in some cases, hey, the Phillies could certainly afford to stop swinging at some pitches that they can't hit or would hit for outs. But at the same time, if what they naturally are a bunch of like ragtag free swingers, Liz, would you rather this offense operate off the chain and just run into the invisible fence until they break through it? Or do you want to see them maintain an adjustment meant to curb their natural plate approaches? Because if not trying to swing at balls means you're not swinging at strikes either, I would call that what Thompson was starting to hint it might be, an overcorrection. The truth is you always look for balance, but you're not really going to find it like all the time.
Yeah. The overcorrection is definitely It that feels like where they're headed. And that, like I said, that's the most important thing to me, is that they recognize what is happening to them and they make steps to fix it. Like, again, there's nothing wrong with them being like, we swing too much at junk. We need to stop doing that. And, you know, I credit them for taking a big swing and being like, we need to stop doing this. Let's train ourselves. And the only way that this turns into a bad thing is if they don't correct themselves, if they don't identify the problem and are like, all right, well, let's try and move in a different direction here. Because it doesn't seem like they've done that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if Thompson seemed like, well, this, if he's hinting at that it might be an overcorrection, it means they're talking about that it might be already and they're not ready to make any changes yet. But like, I feel that it's a positive thing, at least, that that's on the table, because that seems to be what's happened a bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're recognizing what kind of offense they are based on the hitters that make it up, and they're trying to address the issues that an offense like that has. And it really does come down to the last thing I said, balance. And balance isn't something that you find and maintain. It's something you achieve and try to keep for as long as you can before you fall off again, because there's just too many, there's too many X factors. You know, what's the most obvious metaphor for balance? It's like walking on a balance beam. And, you know, every step isn't comfortable even when you're succeeding. That's kind of, it's the same approach you got to have to watching teams like this hit. Like, they are looking for balance between having the information they need to cut down on mistakes and using their natural plate approaches to get comfortable enough to hit. That's a tough balance to strike. You know, sometimes you get a little too much information and it rubs you the wrong way. You come to the park in a different mood. Somebody cuts you off in traffic. You're just on a negative headspace. It's not the right time to receive that information. Or you get really frustrated with yourself because you're tired of hearing the same critiques, or you're tired of striking out and having to walk back to the dugout with guys on base. You're seeing, like, even guys, we talked about the younger guys showing frustration. You've seen plenty of frustration from Trey Turner at the plate in big moments. I mean, it's tough. It's balance is an almost impossible thing to achieve and maintain for long stretches, and that's something the Phillies got to find here. It's certainly going to pay off as they begin this home stretch against homestand against a bunch of teams they really should be able to beat. So just before we wrap up here on this episode of Hittin' Season, this weekend it'll be the Phillies as they come out and debut their classic yellow and Neptune blues. Liz, as the City Connect jerseys make their first appearance in real life tonight in front of a crowd of assuredly supportive and rational people, making the kind of sounds you want to hear when a ball team takes the field.
You know what? They're going to make some noises, and at the very least, they're going to be engaged. Yeah. They're all there, and they're ready to respond, and I don't think any team could ask for more.
The Phillies will face old friend Bailey Falter tonight, which means, yes,
oh,
a no-hitter is on the table.
Congratulations, Bailey. It was great.
Ranger Suarez started the series for them last night, obviously got the win. Tonight is Bailey Falter and Christopher Sanchez. Then on Saturday, you get Marco Gonzalez versus Spencer Turnbull. Mitch Keller and Zach Wheeler, an ace versus ace matchup, is set for the finale on Sunday before they take on the Rockies at home as well. And I'll just leave you with this, another pitching stat. This is from Dan Roach, a producer at NBC Sports Philly. The Phillies rotation, we mentioned their 274 ERA. Well, that's the best in baseball for a rotation. Whip, 102, best in baseball. Opponent on base percentage, 265. Best in baseball. Opponent batting average, 208. Second best in baseball. Walk to strikeout to walk ratio, 394. Second best in baseball. Opponent slugging, 349. That is the third best mark in all of baseball. The Phillies starting rotation has been crushing it. It must be said and said again and again. This team can pitch even when it can't hit. So, Liz, any advice you want to throw the Phillies for their to get their offense going this weekend that you feel like they could really benefit from as they tune into our show?
Hit well in those City Connects, because you're going to have to wear them again.
Yeah, no curses tonight, because this is the last time you're putting them on. Yeah. just stop thinking. Just stop thinking and just get out there and do what you've always done. See what happens. You know, put the ball in play. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. For bonus content, head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. You get new episodes of Absolutely Hammered every week, midweek. A Phillies happy hour where we have a candid conversation about current Phillies issues and narratives, as well as The Dirty Inning, a show where we talk about the dumbest, funniest, and most obscure innings in Philadelphia Phillies history. We have a new episode up this month, and there is still another new episode to come. So if you can't get enough Phillies, the Patreon is there for $5 a month. It's well worth your deal. And if you just like Hittin' Season, BillyPenn.com/HittinSeason is your home, and you get new episodes of this show with myself, John Stolness, and Liz Rocher 3 times a week. Thanks for listening, and from WHYY and Billy Penn, I'm Justin Clue.
I'm Liz Rocher.
And this has been Hittin' Season.